Wolf, and Luke.
We could create a whole world in the mind of the listener simply by using sound effects.
Ron Wolfley. Luke Lipinski.
Huh.
Wolf and Luke. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Well, a crazy weekend around the NFL. Maybe this is what happens when you basically go chalk in wild card weekend or super wild card weekend or whatever we're calling it. It's great to have those upsets the first weekend, but then the second weekend's always kind of, it's good. I mean, it's the NFL playoffs, but not really many upsets in that first weekend, and that gave way to a pretty much perfect weekend these last 2 days. Joining us on the 72 Sold Sports Line right now is Lorenzo Alexander. Zo, how you doing, man? What stands out to you about the last 48 hours?
Hey, you know, football's a crazy game, right? It's never over until it's over, and you can never count your the game until the clock hits zero. I mean, I had maybe, six or seven people text me after Josh Allen's touchdown to Gabriel Davis, and then those same six or seven people, I'm sorry, bro, I didn't mean to text you so early. I didn't know it was going to turn out like that. So just a crazy game, and, anything can happen at any time.
I thought it was the greatest quarterback game I've ever seen. I know, I have a tendency to say, oh,
living
my
in the moment. Yeah, recency bias. And it was a great game. I mean, you have two guys that are, well, obviously Patty Mahomes is already elite. But I think Josh Allen has really solidified his spot in the elite category as well. And one of the things that I kind of thought about after that game, as great as he played, right, the week before that and the week after, he's going to be judged based on something that he really couldn't impact based by the way he could play, right? The kickoff, you can talk about that, and then the defense to allow the team to get back in the Kansas City Chiefs back in the area to play. And that's one of the hard things about playing quarterback. You just judged on wins and losses versus what you actually did in the game to impact it, to give your team a chance to win.
So, Gabriel Davis, I mean, it seems like you always have somebody that's not an unknown, but that's not Stephon Diggs. And you don't always have somebody step up and have eight catches for 201 yards and four touchdowns. That was maybe most impressive.
If you don't follow the Buffalo Bills, or if you're not aware of Gabriel Davis, right, and to your point, he's not an unknown, but he's not a national name. But he was a guy where, my first year out of the league, he came in that next season. So that would be 2020, and I'm watching training camp film, and I'm like, man, I'm hitting guys like, who is 13, man? That dude is out there balling. And so he's a guy that when guys showed up to training camp and played, not only me, but other guys like, man, this dude is a baller. And even Emmanuel Sanders, who the Bills picked up, was like, why did you bring me in here, man? This dude over here is a monster. So guys on the team, guys that have done it at a high level, recognize him, and obviously I think he solidified himself as – up-and-coming star in this league, because he's been doing that all year. It was just great to see him to do it on that stage. And they'll come back bigger and stronger next year and still have multiple guys that you're going to have to deal with in order to beat them as far as matchups.
So were you a little surprised to see the Bills and Leslie Frazier go into the soft zone as soft as they did with 13 seconds to go?
And with the timeouts they had. It's one thing if a team doesn't have timeouts. Yeah, you want to protect the sidelines, be soft, because they're racing against the clock. So it really doesn't even matter if they do get, 10, 20 yards. They got to pass the ball first, run, then clock it and get up there, which takes a lot of time off the clock in itself. And if they had no timeouts, obviously, then that next play, they wouldn't have had a chance to call timeout and kick the field goal. Also on that squib, I know you said, I think Hartman was back there. I don't think it was Tyreek Hill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was
Tyreek
Hill.
And even if the cheetah was back there from a player's perspective, I'm like, I don't care. The cheetah is nice. But we better collectively, right? And for me, the squib kick, and I'm not judging or saying they should have done it, because in the moment you're doing whatever you think is best. But a squib kick, unlike a punt, it really messes up the blocking timing for the front line in order to set up your blocks, in order to allow a guy, even like a Devin Hester or a Cheetah, to really hit a home run.
See, the only thing I would say, though, is a lot of times you've got your special teams players out on the field when you're doing that, obviously.
Yeah.
And to me, I'd rather have your best players out on the field.
Your best. See, I think that's a misconception. I'm on special teams because I'm one of the best. And I guess I have a different mindset, right? Because I don't think your best linebacker in the league, let's say Darius Leonard, is not a better version of and I'm going to sound a little egotistical here, but it's not a better version of Lorenzo Alexander Pro Bowl or a Wolfley Pro Bowl to go down there and cover a kick, because he doesn't know. He doesn't have any experience playing in that type of space or the blocks that he's going to see and how to get a guy down like that. So I want my guys that have been out there.
Yeah, I think I would just disagree right there. Listen, kick the ball off. You've got the number one pass defense in the National Football League.
We're talking – yeah. What? I got that.
Yeah.
But you're going against the clock. So let's say they even do – and when you power squib it, it's not like he's going to catch it in rhythm, in room. That's a ball that's on the ground bouncing. He has to pick it up. Maybe they just take a knee. At least you're going to get a couple of seconds off, but he's not in rhythm. And as great as he is, it's really hard to shake,
man,
10 guys without having blocking relativity. I mean, and that's a big thing. The reason why, like, Devin Hester took that first kickoff to the house back in the day is because there was a regular kickoff. His guys were able to block versus a ball that's bouncing up into the ground. It's hard to stay on your block as it is on kickoff return. So that's why I think it would have been a better call in hindsight to let that ball, and he wasn't even out there. It was Hardman, and he's a good returner too, but he's not a Tyreek Hill.
No,
right?
Totally agree with that.
So
totally agree with that.
That is at least two to three seconds.
So we're
there.
Arguing a point.
Yes.
Which it never happened. Right. I thought it was Tyreek Hill.
Yeah,
that was
and then
out
also,
there.
I think to your point on defense, we have a soft. I don't think it's like a cover four or like a purple. I forgot what we exactly called it. But we used to also have where we had a joker, which I think this would have been a better – because you don't really care if Pat Mahomes stands in the pocket and has forever to throw because he's racing against the time too. Where we would only rush three and have the joker come out and either jam like Kelce or Tyreek Hill based on where those guys lined up, who was number three closest, you know, biggest threat to maybe get something over the middle. And you add another pretty much body out there as far as throwing the timing off with the jam, and then also another body that you have to kind of avoid in that zone, and another guy that can run and
so
possibly get a guy
we
down.
We would have
well.
Called that robber. Is that what you're saying? A joker?
Yeah, I mean, it's a form of robber. It's okay. When I played, it was my role to do that because I could also rush depending on what the situation it is. In that situation, okay. I'd have been an extra linebacker kind of roaming in the zone,
okay.
looking
in
at the quarterback's
zone.
Eyes,
okay.
and being an robber's extra ball, guy to a tackle.
Yeah, robber's man.
So we've talked about Josh Allen, obviously, in the past, but how much, or I guess the better way to ask it is, where have you seen him grow the most since you played with him to where he is last night?
He's just command of the offense in the moment. I think when you rewind and look at the Houston game, my last game that I ever played, the moment, not that it was too big, but he didn't make the smartest, the best decisions in the big moment. I think now he's able, the game is slowed down enough that now the moment really doesn't impact him. He's able to make wise or the best decision quickly and operate at a high level. And, you know, that's why you see him be able to score. I don't know how many points they scored in, you know, the last, you know, 4 or 5 minutes of the
Man,
game, but able to just continue to answer. And then he has weapons out there too. I think that's another big thing that Brandon Bean is upgraded. You know, you got Stephon Diggs. They find a Gabriel Davis. They got Emmanuel Sanders, right? They got Cole Beasley. They got McKenzie. And I think Dable has done a great job, and that run game has come alive when it needed to. And so everything was operating at a high level, and Josh Allen was able to lead that team and really be extremely efficient offensively, which is really cool to see.
So let me ask you this. We barely scraped the surface. Do you got 10 minutes to hang on? Can you come back?
I got 10 minutes.
Okay, cool, man. That'd be awesome. We'd love to have you talk about the Cardinals a little bit, the next beautiful part of the program.
All right.
Sounds good.
So sticking around. The golf tournament hailed as the People's Open returns to the TPC Scottsdale as the Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off February 7th, runs through February 13th. Head to the contest page at arizonasports.com right now for your chance to win tickets. Plus, one lucky winner will win greenskeeper passes. Coming up, the next generation of great quarterbacks was on display over the weekend. Is Kyler Murray falling behind now? It's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Wolf and Luke middays, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
All right, we're live from the Ok-Chin Community Studios. We talked Zone to stick around for one more segment here because that's how good of a weekend it was around the NFL. And so I'll just pick up kind of where we left off. Talking about Josh Allen, last night was his sixth playoff game already. 14 touchdowns to just one interception. Now,
wow.
You were on the team for his first one, certainly. just to bring it back to the Cardinals for a second, we're all trying not to overreact to one game by Kyler Murray, but it does feel like watching Josh Allen just get all this experience, and Joe Burrow especially, it sort of feels like Kyler Murray's kind of fallen behind right now with the other great young quarterbacks, or potentially great young quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, and then it goes back to, you know, what have you done for me lately? And that's what the NFL and, I mean, life in so many ways is all about. You know, they don't care what you did for them early in the season, how great you were once upon a time. They want to know what you're going to do when it's crunch time and late in the year. And, you know, obviously this is a team sport, and it's not just Kyler. But obviously his performance wasn't great either in those games. And so whatever that is, whatever's causing him to fall off later in the year, and, you know, obviously you guys have talked about that ad nauseum, the different reasons, but he has to really look himself in the mirror and figure out what that is for himself and be humble enough to ask for help in order to develop, you know, especially like when you talk about watching film and developing a football IQ. Yeah, everybody, you know, you have some natural ability, innate ability to see the game, and the game comes easy to you. But at some point, it comes easy to a lot of guys because they're all elite. And you have to find little incremental differences that's going to allow you to continue to rise even when your competition or the moment increases as well. And so at this point, that's kind of where they're at. You know, obviously we look at Cliff, we look at Kyler in that same regard. At the end of the year, how can you continue to rise and get better and playing your best football at the end of the season, right? Because we always talk about November and December in the NFL. That's where you make your money. That's where you make your mark, because you start peaking and getting hot at the right time to really make a real run. Nobody remembers what you did in September and October. Honestly, I mean, they don't. Because this is where, you know, champions are born, is November, December, and going into the playoffs.
If there was one characteristic you'd like to see Kyler Murray adopt from some of these other young quarterbacks, is there something out there that you would say? Is there some attribute you would talk about?
I think it's probably a couple of things. I think, you know, obviously, you know, the film thing is huge, if that's true. You know, not having a
preparation.
Solid preparation. Because quarterbacks have to know so much, see so much, you know, because everybody's trying to impact them. And so they have to have a strong understanding of the game and be able to adapt and watch it. It's not something that you can just decide to do all of a sudden. You have to build that preparation, because if you just, like, for example, that last week, if that was his first time watching, let's say he watches, you know, maybe a game a week normally, but then last week he watched three or four games, he just had too much information to process even for him. Right, because he changed his pattern. And so he has to get with somebody in the offseason, whoever that may be, whether it's a guy like a Jordan Palmer, somebody back in Texas, wherever he spends his offseason. Colt McCoy, right. Whoever that is who's going to show him methodically, because obviously he doesn't know how to do it himself, this is what you do, and then this is how you can grow from here. But he has to have a foundation in order to start with and then add on to it, you know, throughout the year or throughout his career. But you can't go from 0 to 60 all of a sudden in that regard. And then I would say number two is how he's perceived when things aren't going right. Is he perceived in body language, as we talk about, is it pouting, or, you know, or is it, you know, okay, I'm upset, I'm disappointed, but hey, here we go, fellas, let's go. You know, and I think that will help, like, on the field in the moment type of things, where the guys around him will say, hey, here we go, versus, oh no, here we go again, right? And that's two different ways of saying the same thing. And I think that's key.
Dealing with adversity, in other words.
In the moment. Because it impacts. Everybody looks at, you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Kyler Murray, you know, all the quarterbacks. If you look over and your guy is sitting by himself and things are going hitting the fan and he hasn't done that all game until it starts going bad, you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Or pouting or throwing help, whatever it may be. And I get – and I'm not jumping on, because I know everybody reacts their own certain way, but it's the way it comes across and the way it looks, and we've seen it before. And he has to be just real and at least be aware of it.
Yeah.
And see, is this really impacting my guys? It's something that he needs to look into to see if he can correct that and help him and his team be better for it, if he can change some of those little things that really make a big difference as far as other guys and his preparation.
I'm talking to Lorenzo Alexander and Zoe. Obviously, everybody is different. So, I mean, you can only make such a generalization here. But in terms of what Kyler Murray had happen a week ago today, you know, as a teammate, would you be concerned that that carries over the next time he's out there and he's got to fight through that extra layer of whatever it is, nervousness or another obstacle, because that first playoff game was so bad the next time he takes the field in the playoffs? Or can that go away?
Yeah, I mean, it's so much time removed. It'd be different if, you know, it was like double elimination. He had to go right back out there next week. I think it's because it's so much time. You have time to get over it. That's his first opportunity. You can kind of toss to the side, okay, this is my first experience with it. This won't happen again. Versus a guy like Stafford, where we saw maybe a little bit of a trend, where then that you may worry about it. But ultimately, I want to see how did it impact him from a preparation standpoint. Does he change? Does he do some more work in the offseason? I'm not talking about, you know, this week he needs to be back in the film room grinding, because there's some time you need to get away from the game. But, you know, when we talk about, you know, mid to late February, you know, is he starting to, you know, maybe get with a guy, hey, let's watch some film and let me kind of review the progression of my season so I can identify a plan that I can do to work on and maybe start working on how do I break down film? How are people attacking me? And let's go through that methodically and start building some muscle memory and some football IQ as far as how people are going to continue to attack me, and some things that I may be doing to myself that I need to redirect. And so he needs to get with, you know, some form of coach. You know, obviously in the offseason, the NFL has certain rules where you can't get with your position coach. So that's why I always say find some outside source. But you need somebody to go through it with you. You can't – the blind can't lead the blind, right? And so if you have no foundation or substance, you can't say, well, I'm going to do it myself and I'm just going to watch film, because you've never done it and haven't shown to do it this far. You need outside help. But that takes a little bit of humility to allow somebody to talk to you and speak to you in a way that may feel uncomfortable, because you've been considered – the greatest thing ever, you know, especially out of Texas college and in the field being a MVP. So he has to have some humility through this process.
I would say accountability as well. Other than what you saw in the Bills Chiefs game, what was the one game you loved other than that one?
What else did I really love? You know, I was in
49ers, Green Bay.
I was in and out, man. You know, I was coaching flag football, Lambeau, basketball. Everybody's been asking me. You know, I really had – I was more nervous about my 7-8 U basketball last night. I'm on the sideline coaching these guys up, getting them ready. That's the other game that really got me excited, even more so than that Bills game last night. But, you know, I love the 49ers. Obviously, I grew up a Niners fan, being from the Bay Area. The Raiders were in L.A., so people always say, well, not a Raiders. No, I was a Niners fan. And so I always liked that physicality, obviously knowing Kyle a little bit from when I was in Washington, and Trent and some other guys on that team that I've played with or played against. So just seeing that physical nature where it's more old school football. It's not about the QB. It's about man on a man. I'm going to knock you out and really dominate a game. And they made it ugly and was able to figure out to win it. And that's why only way I thought they was going to be able to beat Green Bay, make an ugly game, special teams, defense, right, running the ball, real physical. And that was really cool to see.
So the Rams game, they ended up beating Tampa twice this year. They held Brady to just one touchdown in each game. He looked frustrated yesterday. Just in general, that sort of defense, and obviously it's loaded with Aaron Donald and Von Miller, but I mean, why is a defense like that? It seems like that's the best way to beat Brady, is to have a defense like that.
Well, it's the best way to beat Brady is to have a great defensive line. Anytime he's ever struggled, whether you go back to the Giants when they were down significantly versus the Falcons, right? Grady Jarrett, I think, had three sacks in the first half. Philly, right? When you think about that defensive line, think about the defensive line of the Rams. Anytime you can impact them, especially when you talk about interior, Grady Jarrett, Darnold, and I can't think of the guy's name from Philly that's a monster too, but plays in the middle. Anytime
Trent Cole?
You get,
Was it Trent Cole?
Not Trent Cole. He's an outside guy. Ah, oh, man. I'm hating
myself. No, this is going to bother me.
He's another dominant D tackle, though, interior lineman. Anytime you can impact him and make him come off a spot where he can't step up and be an athlete within the pocket, it always has caused Brady to have probably some of his worser performances.
Hey, Zoe, man, thank you so much for hanging around that extra time. We
appreciate anything for you, Wolf. And like I said, I don't know if you got my text, man, but you're the most humble man I know. I have a lot of respect for you. So anything you ever ask, I'm going to definitely do.
Oh, dude. Thank you, man. Appreciate you, Zoe.
We appreciate
it,
man.
Brian.
Later.
God bless.
That's Lorenzo Alexander joining us. We should ask him how his basketball game went. Oh, well, next time.
Yeah.
How many?
I know.
He coaches every sport.
Everything. Volleyball. Here we go.
Can you imagine Zoe as
actually
your volleyball
went to my
coach?
First volleyball tournament, man.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. That was kind of cool right there.
It's a little bit different from football.
Totally.
Yeah. Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up, an unbelievable weekend around the NFL. So which games were our favorites? That's next. It's the Wolf and Luke Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Wolf and Luke middays, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Wolf, we haven't even gotten into that Bengals game that started everything on Saturday afternoon, and I'm marveling at the fact that these games, you know, they try and schedule them, and you know the different stations have their, you know, they have the draft to try and pick which game they want the most. I'm just marveling at the fact that it seemed like each one got better. It really did. And each day, I should say, Green Bay, San Francisco. And then yesterday, it's like, oh, Rams, Buccaneers looked terrible in the first half. Second half was something we'd be talking about almost all show, if not for the game after it. But that Bengals-Titans game, that's a pretty good game. Joe Burrow's now 2-0 in the playoffs.
It was absolutely fantastic. It truly was. There were so many things about the weekend that if I told you that Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times and the Bengals won the game, would you ever believe that? Would you ever believe it if somebody said Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times in that game and they won it?
But I will say this. If you told me a quarterback got sacked 9 times and they won, I would say it was probably Joe Burrow because he's been getting sacked, it feels like, 9 times every game since he came into the league.
Right, but it wasn't 9. Trust me on that one right there.
No, 9's
difference. Sacks. And they can't, somehow, some way, Joe Mixon, they overcame it. I absolutely love that game right there. I did. It was also a game that was won or lost on the line of scrimmage. It was very, very physical. That was the one outlier as well in this game. It was the one outlier that the team that rushed for more yards actually won games. That was the one where it didn't. The Tennessee Titans had way more rushing yards, 140, I think, mm-hmm. overall compared to 65 for the Bengals. And yet it was still fantastic. What a way to kick it off, to have that game right there. Joe Burrow, a guy that I love and have loved since he came out. This guy is absolute ball-out nails. And you could see it in his rookie year, of course. He got better in year two. He's only going to get better going forward.
I love the quote at the conclusion of the game, too, from Joe Burrow right here.
No, I'm tired of the underdog narrative. And we're a really, really good team. We're here to make noise. And you know, teams are going to have to pay attention to us. We're, like I said, a really good team with really good players and coaches. And we're coming for it all.
He's right.
Yeah, don't worry about the underdog narrative, though. Don't worry about it. Who cares if you're the underdog or the favorite? Who cares? Who cares? All I know is this right here. I love these guys that are around me. I love this team. We're going to go out. We're going to ball out. We don't care if people think we're the favorite. We don't care if people think we're the underdog. I don't care, because all we're going to continue to do is keep winning. That's the one exception I had with what he said.
I at least understand sometimes, you know, a team will run with that and be like, oh, nobody believes in us. He's just like, no, we're going to win. It is crazy, though. I don't know if I just forgot this or what, and not that 25's old, but you think like, okay, Joe Burrow, it's his second year in the league. I mean, he's as old as Josh Allen. He's 9 months younger than Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that helps you in the playoffs. Apparently it does, but you're talking about a guy that steps in and is 2-0 in his first two playoff games, and he hasn't faced the most dominant defenses. I get that, but he's 2-0 in the playoffs, and
yeah.
Joe Burrow versus Patrick Mahomes, I don't care what's going on this weekend. I'm not missing that game, Wolf.
Yeah. You know, once again, it's just me as a former player. I don't care about the narrative. I don't care, because that narrative has no power. It has no power whatsoever over us once we get in between the white lines.
As long as you don't let it.
That's what I'm talking about.
As long as you don't let it.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I'm a professional athlete.
You don't think any
what
of them ever
talking
let
about?
It, but some of them,
because
don't
you all
like...
of a sudden, you say I stink, and so I'm going to go out and stink because you say I do?
No, I think we've
You say that
we've
I'm the underdog,
that.
So I'm going to go out there and... No, is a professional athlete, knock it off.
I agree.
Go do what you're – hey, listen, as a college kid maybe, you're 18 years old. Hey, you know, this guy says you suck. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you might turn into a puddle. You might. As a grown man, hopefully you've got a modicum of confidence about you going about your business, and really don't sit there and read everything that everyone says about you or says about your team, and then suddenly draw conclusions based on what they're saying about you and your team. Because if you are doing that, man, we're all in trouble.
We talked a lot with Lorenzo Alexander, obviously, about Bills Chiefs, and that was mine and I think probably most people's favorite game of the weekend. But, Wolf, we were drawing up the show sheet, and you didn't say anything, but I'm assuming it. Your favorite game of the weekend is actually the one they're showing highlights of right now on this TV in here, and it was not Bills Chiefs.
Well, first of all, you know what, honestly, it was natural grass. Start there. It was natural grass. It was Lambeau Basin, or it's Lambeau Field. Wow. And then all of a sudden, there was contention. There was a contested line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And I thought the Packers came out and established a physicality in that first half and did a really, really good job of trying to run the ball and stay really balanced. And just watching it, go back and look at the tape and how physical they were playing. Then all of a sudden, halftime came around. And the 49ers came out of the tunnel in the second half, and they were ready to ball. So that led me to believe there was yelling and there was pointing at that halftime in that locker room. There was yelling and pointing, and somebody may have even screamed. But they came out, the 49ers, in that second half and basically did what the Packers did in the first half. Go back and look at the tape. Who was the more physical team? And anytime you're talking about that, Basinonians, look at blocking and tackling. That'll tell you who's more physical. And the 49ers were the more physical team in the second half.
I give them a ton of credit, even though I don't want to see them win. Although against the Rams, maybe I do. I don't even know what to believe anymore in the NFC. But they have all season long, Wolf, and especially now playing against the best teams in the NFC, are a team that really isn't built to come back. Now, I know they did in week 18 against the Rams. They were down 17-0, and I that blew my mind, because the 49ers don't look like a team that is built to, okay, we're down three scores, we can come back. Like, you would think if the Cowboys could have gotten up by 14 on them, or if Green Bay could have gotten up by 14 on them, that would be it. But they don't let you get up by 14 on them. And so now you've got a third meeting this season between the 49ers and Rams, and I'm sure the Rams are favored. I haven't looked. But San Francisco's won six in a row against them. This was Kyle Shanahan after the game.
It's not an easy place to play in, especially those conditions. I thought we missed a couple ops. You know, I thought we had a chance. I was so proud of George because that was a play that we worked on for a while, and he ran such a good route and was going to have a touchdown and just didn't finish with the catch. And then some of the plays he came and made later in the game, just the one-hander. I want to say we got 3 points out of that drive. I can't quite remember, but those guys just to keep coming at it and not to get discouraged, because it was a one-score game for a long time, and we ended up getting a huge play on special teams, and our guys just never waver.
That's what they want. They want that low-scoring game. They want that close game that is hanging in the balance, and how about winning on a punt block, basically, because that's essentially what they did.
Yeah, no, honestly, right now, special teams, Basinonians, matter, and special teams won this game for the 49ers. The block field goal, as you mentioned, the block punt return for a touchdown, that really kept the 49ers in the game and allowed them to win the game. It's just, it's amazing. In the game of football, transition matters, man. It's critical. And the 49ers won the game because their special teams played better than the Packers' special teams. There's a guy by the name of Rick Goslin. As a matter of fact, Jimmy Johnson was actually talking about Goslin after the game on the post-game wrap-up. And Rick Goslin is a guy that has tracked special teams. And Bill Belichick actually loves this guy, right? He's a reporter, a guy that has tracked special teams and ranked special teams. And the Green Bay Packers were ranked number 32 special teams in the league this year by Rick Goslin, who keeps track of all of this stuff.
Well, based on what I saw on Saturday night, he's right. And it is It's going to go down as one of the more strange stats to me that Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl. Unless I'm forgetting a Super Bowl, he's only been to one Super Bowl. And that is tough when you try to make an argument for a guy, not that he's not great, but you can't make the argument for him to be the greatest of all time, obviously, because Brady has that. But even now, I mean, how has Aaron Rodgers only been to one Super Bowl?
It's pretty stunning because it's not like the Packers haven't been in the playoffs.
No, they're in there every year. And they tend to win one game and bow out. This is the first time they've bowed out in their first game since 2013. But there's a lot of years they get in there and they're in for one game and then they just, it's weird. You would think that guy would have been to four or five Super Bowls, even if he wasn't winning all of them.
Yep.
All right, that's when we come back. We will get into the Phoenix Suns, who are stacking up wins again, and they've got two pretty big games coming up now, tonight and Wednesday, against one of their biggest Western Conference contenders. That's next. It's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Wolf and Luke middays, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Yeah, Suns got a big one tonight at home against the Utah Jazz, and we'll talk to Kevin Ray later on in the show, of course, for game day with K-Ray, but Wolf, the Suns pick up a couple more wins, one over the weekend. They've now won six in a row and sit at 36-9, the best record in basketball by three games at this point. So it's not, you know, it's not like a back-and-forth thing. They've kind of opened up a little bit of a gap, and they have a seven-game lead over the Utah Jazz, who they're going to play tonight and Wednesday. So, I mean, this is a potential playoff preview at some point. This is the team, if you recall, the only team, actually, the Suns had a worse record than in the regular season last year was Utah by one game.
Mm-hmm.
So Donovan Mitchell's been banged up, but this is going to be, these next two games are going to be fun.
This is going to be a great game, man, no doubt about it. And we're all going to be watching it with bated breath, of course, to see the culture of the Phoenix Suns on the table for all. And one of the things when we talk about the culture of the Suns that I love is the fact that, you know what, Devin Booker is a superstar. Would you say that's a true statement?
I would say that, yes.
I think Devin Booker is still getting better and better and better just watching him, and he's a superstar right now. He could not shoot the ball against the Pacers. He could not.
No.
It was 5 of 23 from the floor. 5 of 23 and scored 11.
But again, he couldn't shoot that night. DeAndre Ayton was out of the lineup, and they still win.
Exactly. That is my point. That is my point right there. It is such a beautiful thing when you see this team go out there and their culture is on display for all to see in a game where DeAndre Ayton is not out on the floor and Devin Booker could not shoot the ball. And we all know Devin Booker, one of the finest scorers in the National Basketball Association, ladies and gentlemen, who can shoot. And yet he was clanking. He was Iron Man for the most part. And yet the Suns still won that game.
And Mikal Bridges, after the game, talked about the Suns' ability to be unselfish.
Yeah, I think that's what makes us a pretty good team. Pretty good team. Everybody can play, everybody can hoop, and we just feed off each other, and we're all unselfish. Even guys that got the ball in their hands 24/7, they're unselfish as well, and we play for each other and we find each other.
Yeah, you know what? They're unselfish, too. And if you have a sliver of selfishness, raise your hand right now if you do, Mason audience. Okay, I've got my hand up right now. We all have a tendency to be very selfish. Yet, so much of the time, you know what accountability does for you in your life? Like your mom or your dad getting on you, my young crunk brother, because you are selfish sometimes. Or even your parents, maybe they're selfish and they hold each other accountable when they're getting selfish. Whatever happens right there, it really helps when you have somebody you respect an awful lot that walks up to you and says to you, knock it off. All right. And again, this is the leadership that is going on inside the Phoenix Suns locker room. And what I love about it is even somebody like Devin Booker is willing to receive a critique of knock it off. Even Chris Paul is willing to receive that critique. And the fact that there is accountability to a point where you could walk up to Chris Paul, somebody in that locker room, and say, knock it off, man. That's not who you are. It's a great reminder to everybody.
I said this last week, and I'll rephrase it this week. Whenever somebody writes that book about this Phoenix Suns era right here, I mean, if they end up winning a title and somebody there better be a chapter in there about how important it was that not only did Devin Booker never leave, but that he was as receptive to getting better as he was when Monty Williams got here, or certainly when Chris Paul got here. I mean, we saw the flip in Devin Booker last year. And again, he was already averaging 25, 26, 27 points a game every year. But he hit a whole new level because, yeah, he wanted Chris Paul here. He wanted Monty Williams here. And that trickles down, man. It trickles down to everybody else in the team.
It's unbelievable to see it right now. Monty Williams wanted to come here. He wanted to come here because of Devin Booker.
Yep.
Because D-Book was here. I think that is profound right there. And yet, what I love about Devin Booker, not only is he wildly talented, but this guy, he's got the heart of a cold, cunning assassin. I mean, honestly, he wants to get better. Look how much better he's got on the defensive end of the floor.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness. He has developed tremendously on that end of the floor right now. He's becoming a true two-way guy.
We'll never know how much those first four, I'll say the 4 years, because his first 4 years were the miserable years where he was averaging, you know, 22, 24, 27 points a game basically for a season, but the team was winning less games than he was averaging points basically. We'll never know how much that formed him into the guy he is now, where it's, you can tell he appreciates every step of this. And he's committed, and he's going to do every little thing to get better defensively, and he has that extra level that he's able to hit because he's willing to be humble about it and find another way. Maybe he just naturally was that way. But I have to think those first 4 years when he came in and he was doing a lot individually and just not getting any help and being at the bottom of the standings every year, that has to be in the back of his mind sometimes, because it has to at least be a part of what drives him, because he's extremely driven.
Which I love when you listen to him talk. I would love to take a group of Devin Booker's cuts after games. And when you listen to him, the things he says and the things he talks about after games, I love it. It's very, very revealing. If you read inside and in between the lines, it's very revealing if you listen to it.
This isn't Booker talking after the game on Saturday, but it is Monty Williams talking about Booker and how they can win even when he has an off night.
They didn't stop shooting. You know what I mean? I thought we made enough plays, and I like the confidence that Cam had. You know, he'd missed a couple, and then he knocked down the one in the right corner. Guys are going to have tough nights, you know, and you come back off of a long road trip, and whether it's rhythm or time changes, whatever the case may be, you almost expect that kind of a game. You hate to see it, but you kind of expect it. I'm just glad we were able to show that we can win when Book has nights like that and Cam has nights like that.
Isn't it? It's got to be great, right? As a fan of a team, to go into the game, man, Booker, maybe Booker doesn't have it tonight. That's fine. We'll just find another way to win. Yeah. Oh, no DeAndre Ayton. It doesn't matter. They'll just win. Okay, well, what if we don't have Ayton and Booker's off and campaigns? No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They'll just find another way to win. And I know, again, Saturday was the Pacers. They've beaten some really good teams this season like that. And they're probably not going to have DA tonight. They're not going to have Jay Crowder against Utah. So they're going to have to win somewhat shorthanded. And if Devin Booker doesn't have a great shooting night, I mean, that hurts their chances when you're already missing those guys and you're playing Utah. But if you told me Devin Booker had a bad shooting night tonight, that doesn't guarantee a loss to me at all.
Yeah. You know, just watching too, Chris Paul, this guy's the oldest son, and he's also the most durable.
Yes.
He's 36. He's not 37. Don't say he's 37.
Who would ever say that? Brothers.
Who would ever say that right now? He's not going to be 37 until May. All right, he's 36 years old right now, and yet he's played in every game this year. The Suns have played 45 games, and Chris Paul has played 45 games. Truly amazing to watch him continue to go about his craft. Go out there again, 16 assists for Chris Paul on Saturday night against the Pacers. He's irreplaceable right now. At least it feels that way. If there's one guy, and Devin Booker, I've said this for the longest time, I think Devin Booker, he's the Suns' best player. But I think Chris Paul is irreplaceable on this team.
That's an interesting thought, because Devin Booker may go down as the Suns' best player of all time when all is said and done. To me, it's those two guys. I don't know who would be third if you were ranking them of like, okay, we're going into a 10-game stretch and we're going to have to win games without this guy. If you're telling me you don't have Chris Paul, again, then they don't become a bad team, but they're a much different team. If you don't have Devin Booker, I mean, we've seen it this year. We've seen they didn't have Booker for a good chunk after that Warriors game, and they still won more than they lost. We're seeing them win without DeAndre Ayton pretty much every game lately. Mikal Bridges, I think if you didn't have him, because what he does, other guys do parts of it, but nobody is Mikal Bridges. I think maybe he would be the third most irreplaceable. But the best thing about this team, Wolf, is what's the stat now? They've had Paul, Ayton, and Booker for 23 of the 45 games. They've only had those three together for 23 of the 45, and they're 36-9.
That is stunning right there. 36-9. Taste it.
All right, we come back. It's already the midway point of the show. It's time for Wolfing Down Your Lunch with Aaron Maloney. Next, it's the Wolf and Luke Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.